I'm really happy, though, that my next guest is on the line. She's Anne Hertzberg. She's legal advisor of NGO Monitor and an expert in lawfare. I want to talk to her about an article which appeared in Al Jazeera, of all publications. I just want to read the headline: A 42 billion euro dilemma. What is stopping the EU from holding Israel to account? We're going to get into that now. Anne, as always, thank you for being with me on Chai FM.
Hi, good afternoon.
So, my source story is from Al Jazeera today, which kind of says it all. We know exactly from which standpoint they're going to come. But nevertheless, I'm finding it really interesting to just monitor and track what people are saying, because I think putting your head in the sand isn't going to be helpful. I have a listener who disagrees with me entirely and thinks I shouldn't be giving airtime to publications such as Al Jazeera, but with the greatest of respect, I tend to disagree. So that's the chat I want to have with you this afternoon. And before I get into the details of the article, maybe it's kind of worth setting out for us the relationships, certainly from a trade perspective, the EU-Israel Association Agreement. What does this agreement provide to Israel, and how significant is it for Israel to have access to these European markets?
Well, I think, first of all, we have to think of it not as what it does for Israel, but that it's a mutually beneficial agreement between Israel and the EU. So there are many benefits to Israel with this agreement, but there are just as many, perhaps on some areas, even more important benefits for the EU itself. So I think that when people talk about this agreement, they're only looking at it in one direction, which is not an accurate way to look at it. So I think that's the first thing. The second thing is, the EU is Israel's, I believe, largest trading partner. But, you know, if markets change, people look elsewhere. And we've noticed that there have been some reports published in recent days that Israel's GDP has nearly doubled in 10 years. It is becoming a huge player in the energy markets, particularly on natural gas. And that's nothing to say about the defense and technology areas, AI in particular. So that's really what we need to focus on. When you have a good product to sell, you know, people can threaten all they want, but there will be people who want it.
Specifically, those particular industries you've just referred to, I mean, each one of them are so desperately required by Europeans. These aren't optionals, you know, should I be importing rosemary chocolates or not? These are absolutely vital. Gas, with what's going on in Russia and Ukraine, can't say no to that. And defense, well, you can't say no to that either. So it makes a whole bunch of sense what you are saying about the mutuality of the situation.
And I think also what's particularly absurd about the whole situation, particularly as it pertains to France, is these countries in Europe have, in the past, since the Iran war started, the past couple months, have revealed themselves to be so foolish, completely impotent. They have revealed their armies to be completely ineffectual. And they've revealed themselves to be apparently completely unaware of how the conflict in Iran is related to the conflict in Ukraine. And so, you know, they're asking the United States for help with Ukraine, lots of money, lots of weaponry. And yet they are very angry about the Iran conflict, which has been supplying Russia with many drones and other weapons that have been used against Ukraine. So how this is impacting Russia, if the Iranian regime is damaged or falls, how that will impact the Ukrainian conflict. And the European leaders seem completely blind because their feelings have been hurt by, you know, quote unquote, hurty words from Donald Trump. So I find it completely childish and frankly ridiculous.
Take me into just a little bit of the detail here. They talk about, in fact, there is many people talking about Article 2 of this EU-Israel Association Agreement. It apparently has to do with the human rights clause. What is it actually saying? It is making certain demands or requirements of Israel in respect to human rights? What is it saying?
So in the agreement, and actually I've been finding it quite funny that people have been focusing on that clause because we've looked at that issue for almost 20 years,
Okay.
and that clause has been misused so many times by European leaders. They used it for years to justify funding to terror-linked NGOs just because these NGOs claimed they were human rights groups and that therefore that was authorized under the agreement, which it was not.
Oh, wow,
So
that's
now,
fascinating. Okay.
And whenever we tried to raise that with European officials, they, went completely silent and they had nothing to say about it because they knew they were being caught out in fabricating what the agreement said. But essentially, the agreement is saying that in their relations, both, and it's again, it's not a one-way street. It's not Israel only. Basically saying both sides need to keep human rights concerns into account. There's no defining of what that means. And frankly, let's look at all the violations of human rights that the Europeans have been doing lately, most notably funding terrorism. So, there's
It's
violations,
fascinating
potential
because,
violations on
yeah,
both sides.
I mean, again, I took it from Al Jazeera, so it certainly wasn't mentioning any of those aspects. And that is why I wanted to have this conversation with you, because I really did want to know what was missing in the framing. And for that reason, this has been a very, very valuable discussion this afternoon. They also claim, those activists, again, seeing it from the one-sided perspective which they are coming to this issue, that the EU can simply suspend the entire agreement with Israel because of Israel's actions. Legally speaking, is that how these clauses work? Or once again, is that an oversimplification and they're seeing it the way they want it to be seen?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a mass oversimplification because in addition to the agreement, there are lots of side agreements, other laws that are applicable, trade laws, many other things. So that all needs to be analyzed in context. But really what it's going to come down to is if the Europeans are going to act in a fit of pique, because again, they're angry that Trump hurt their feelings and exposed them for being paper tigers. Again, they want to do, we've seen in Spain apparently wants to court business with China. So if Europe thinks that, their future is based in China, well, there's not much we can do about it. But I'm sure that the Israeli government and Israeli companies, which have extremely desirable products, and capacity and technology and knowledge, are extreme. Again, there will be plenty of buyers for that technology. And I would also think that if you actually spoke to your average European, they would rather maintain that relationship, which is also going to harm European jobs and companies if it is severed. So I think these are just, the Europeans lashing out because, again, they've been exposed for being quite weak.
You see, sometimes, and again, I just treat this space here with you now as a safe space where I can really say what I feel. But I kind of think sometimes Israel does score own goals. I think back to the very recent passage of the death penalty for Palestinian terrorists, taking away discretion. And I just think, how did Israel think that was going to be received by the international community? And why were they giving these guys like, they scored an own goal. They just scored an own goal.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with you, but I think what people need to understand, and I definitely know this dynamic also exists in South Africa, is that you're dealing with two different things. You're dealing with domestic politics and international politics. And unfortunately, at the domestic level in Israel, like every country, there are certain elements of people that are very populist and are very parochial, and they don't understand the impact of what they're doing, or they don't care. And so that unfortunately is again a dynamic in Israel. And so their concerns are how they can improve, their own power, their own positions, how they can be more outrageous, get more attention, and the impact to the country as a whole be damned. So, unfortunately, again, that exists in Israel just like in every other country. And there's just not a lot you can do about it.
I want to touch on the language that was used in that article, and it's just the timing of it is serendipitous because our president sent a letter to the United Nations yesterday, a very strong letter, in which, for a change, he condemned Israel. But it seems to me that it's accepted practice now to use terms as if they've been settled and judged and found to be guilty of genocide, war crimes, grave breaches, as if these things have been like legally established. And I see an absolute danger that that is the case, that these terms have now been accepted as fact.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what's been happening from day one. You know, you throw the term out. It has a lot of emotional power, even though it's not proven, it's being used incorrectly. It's being exploited. And that's exactly why they use them. And, because they, you know, if you repeat a term enough, then it just becomes an established fact, you know, in public opinion.
Yeah, the lie's big enough, people will believe it. And there's no counterweight. There's no counterweight at all. I mean, nowhere in that article and nowhere in our president's letter and nowhere in any similar kind of missives has anybody mentioned the role of Palestinian governance or lack thereof, armed groups, regional actors. I mean, it's just incredible to me that they just leave out an entire side of an issue.
Yeah, I mean, we are unfortunately, and this has definitely been exacerbated by social media, but we are in an era where public officials around the world feel no responsibility anymore to public discourse and civil society and civics. And they feel no responsibility for their governance and maintaining, again, the fabric of society. And so therefore, they will promote, you know, blatant falsehoods. They don't care what the impact is. And again, this is another example of that. So it's completely irresponsible. And a lot of it is just, you know, naked political self-interest for the people doing it.
And yet it's gaining traction. So it's something we need to be aware of, and we need to follow, and we need to be wary of. But that's where we're going to leave it this afternoon. Anne Hertzberg, legal advisor of NGO Monitor. As always, thank you for your time here on Chai FM. Appreciate it.